Give it another couple of seconds until 9:05. But okay, Glenn, would you read off who we've got on the call?
I'll do that with pleasure, Avery. We have Avery Doria, the GNSO Council Chair, Chuck Gomes, Registry Constituency, Tony Holmes, ISP, Stefan van Gelder, Registrar, Alan Greenberg, ALAC, John Nevitt, Registrar, David Maher, Registry Constituency, Steve Metellis, IPC, Raimundo Becker from the ICANN Board and the SIC, and for staff we have Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, Ken Bauer, Julie Headland, and Glenn de Saint-Gerie. Have I left off anybody?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Avery.
We also had a couple people wrote and said they would not be able to make it. I heard from Olga, who I guess has a geographic regions meeting at the same time.
And so will Zahid as well.
Okay.
And Adrian said he could not make it either.
Right. Okay. And hopefully we'll have people join in from the other constituencies. Okay, I put together a quick agenda. I obviously put it together rather on a Sunday, which was rather late Friday, and so probably people haven't had a chance to review it. So first thing was an update from the Structural Improvements Committee and policy staff, and I'm not sure how that divided or who needed to say what, but just there were a number of outstanding questions. Then there's review action items on question 5, question 7, 8, question 10, and the NCA appointments. Continue to work on other on open items, and I sent an email later. I have sort of tried to pull together what the bylaws kind of look like at the moment, so we can either walk through the open issues list or maybe walk through that document. We can decide which is best, and then discuss process for completing the work. You know, possibilities including but not limited to work during the week of 1-8 June to complete as much as possible, extending our meeting next week to longer 1 hour in order to complete as much as possible, crafting and publishing several motions to separate bylaw changes that have consensus, those that have rough consensus, and those that have unresolved options, and discussing rough content of report to be sent to council, by council, to board after vote. But that's something that, you know, we don't necessarily need to work out today. That's got more time until the end of the month. So, any issues or comments, changes on the agenda? Okay, in which case we'll proceed with it. Raimundo, were you going to give us an update on the board and the SIC?
Yes, I can do it.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
In fact, I don't have many news today because the SIC is only meeting tomorrow. We'll try to go through those both issues, the question.
I can barely hear you.
I say that I don't have many news to bring today, but the SIC is only going to meet tomorrow. We tried to get an answer to both issues on one hand on the questionnaire, on the other on the charters, but the list wasn't able to come through with so many holidays in this weekend, but everywhere in the world. And so the SIC is meeting tomorrow. I hope we'll get both things through tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Raimundo? Okay, so we look forward to hearing something after tomorrow's meeting.
Okay. As soon as I have something, I will post them to...
Excuse me. We won't wait. We won't have to wait until the next meeting, right? You'll send something to the list,
yeah,
so we can work on it.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So if there are no questions on that, is there any update from from policy staff. One question I wanted to ask about, and I might be misremembering, since no one else has confirmed my memory, but had someone from the staff mentioned that some of the policy staff and a legal counsel were working together on a parallel version of the bylaws that they were going to be bringing out soon, or did I hallucinate that?
I can address that. No, I think what we were talking about was specifically related to the Annex A, the PDP, rules. And so the thing where we were looking at was how you just update that to deal with the PDP rules in the transition, because obviously the PDP group won't be completed their work when the transition takes place, or if possible, it's not going to be the same time. So we were trying to see what cosmetic changes, just to allow the, everything to go forward.
Hey, Margie, it's Liz. There was also the conversation where we had started doing a bunch of bylaws changes with legal and realized that it was premature, basically, to try to get their exact wording when so many issues were still up in the air. There was that early draft, if you recall, that we sent to legal, and they had a bunch of comments and suggestions about reworking things, but that was premised on the first draft that we had put together, and I think that it was overtaken by events, and that we have a placeholder with them also to go back on all of these changes once we have a clear understanding of the details of what we want to do.
That's right.
Okay, thanks. Any questions on any of that? Okay. Then the next thing was the action items we had. And the first one was question 5. And Milton, Olga, Chuck, and Philip were working on that. I have email from Chuck. Chuck is on the call, but he's on silent at the moment. So he sent me a copy of their text, but I guess it isn't fully approved by the group yet. I don't know, Chuck, if you wanted to say anything. If you want me to read the text, let me know, and I'll do so, but maybe it's good.
Sure, Aubrey, I just took myself off mute, so feel free to read it. That would be fine. Milton, Olga, and I are all fine with the text, but we have not received a response from Philip. And my suggestion, while I'm off mute here, is that if Philip doesn't support the text that we have, the other three of us have agreed to, that he go ahead and submit an alternative, and that we present to the full group the one that three of us have agreed to, and his, and then the group can comment and discuss and try to reach at least a rough consensus on a final wording.
Okay, so that's something that we'll probably end up doing. I'll read what you sent in now. Stakeholder groups should ensure the representation on the DNSO Council is both geographically and sectorally diverse as appropriate. If the number of allocated council seats for a stakeholder group is less than the number of ICANN geographic regions, the applicable SG should select councilors who are each from different geographic regions. If the number of allocated council seats for a stakeholder group is greater than or equal to the number of ICANN geographic regions, the applicable SG should select at least one councilor from each geographic region. In all cases, no more than 2 stakeholder group council representatives may be from the same ICANN geographic region. Any exceptions to this requirement must be approved by a 2/3 vote of both houses. So, I could probably cut that in somewhere so it could be seen by people, but any comments? Questions?
This is Steve Mathaus. My only comment is that at first glance, just having heard it read once, This imposes a much greater geographic diversity obligation on the user house stakeholder groups than it does on the contracted parties house stakeholder groups.
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment?
This is John. Could you explain that point, Steve?
Well, if I heard it correctly, you have to have, and assuming that the registry the registrar stakeholder group has three seats, you have to have people from three different regions. Assuming that the commercial interest stakeholder group has six seats, we have to have people from five different regions.
Oh, I see. But, okay, I understand, but you could have two people from the same region, we can't.
Well, we'd have to have two people from the same region. It's mathematically impossible to do otherwise, so thanks a lot.
Exactly right. Right. Thanks.
Well, actually, okay. Well, even if they increase the number of regions, that would still be the case.
Is there any consideration of increasing the number of regions?
They have a regions group talking. I have no idea what they're going to do.
I wasn't aware there was any thought. I thought it was reallocating among the five, but that could change it, obviously.
Gavri, can I just ask whoever's running the admin on the Acrobat thing and who's zooming in and out of the document, if they can stay zoomed in, it's really useful. That way we can actually read what's written on there.
Okay.
Don't know who's doing that.
That's me. I don't know if it's in this. Is it in this document, Avery?
I just cut it into the bylaws now.
Oh.
As one of the options. It's not in this document. No, I didn't have it yet.
It's actually not in this document.
It's still useful to follow that document. That explains why I couldn't find it in this one.
I just cut the text that I read into the bylaws. And if you look in the notes, the draft I'm running of the bylaws, the URL is listed there. So I did just cut it into there as an option under. And if you search for Q5, mm-hmm. you'll find both the existing text and this text, though it's not clearly laid out yet.
That's on the wiki, right?
Right, and I have to do a little bit more editing.
I'm looking at that now. Okay, thanks.
To make it distinguish where one ends and the other begins.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to comment on Q5 at the moment? Okay, then we'll wait for Philip. As I say, I've got both of them cut into the. I'm trying to do too many things at one time. Which should ensure. There it is. Okay, I've made it a little clearer. If you did pull it before, I've just resaved it, putting a little space between the two so you'll be able to tell which is which. Okay, on Q7 and 8, I basically had a action item of trying to figure out where to stick something in about how various rules would get made. I looked at it for a while, and basically it occurred to me that it was really Section 2 that needed to encompass this, but for it to make sense, I also had to mention constituency stakeholder groups, houses, and such at the beginning. Otherwise, talking about, the two houses, the four stakeholder groups, the constituencies will be responsible for defining their own charters wouldn't make sense. So I sent to the list over the weekend, I guess only yesterday, a proposed change, and I apologize for waiting till the weekend to do all the work, but regular work got in the way. I suggest a change to replace what is currently in Section 2, and this is in the wiki and on the email list. It is not in the table because it was just proposed for this meeting, and it isn't something we'd even talked about yet. The GNSO shall consist of 1. A number of constituencies organized within the stakeholder groups as described in Section 5 of this article. 2. 4 stakeholder groups organized within houses as described in Section 5 of this article. 3, two houses within the GNSO Council as described in Section 3 of this article, 4, and a GNSO Council responsible for managing the policy development process of the GNSO as described in Section 3 of this article. Except as otherwise defined in these bylaws, the GNSO Council, the two houses, the four stakeholder groups, and the constituencies will be responsible for defining their own charters, rules, procedures, and or names with the approval of their members and of the ICANN Board of Directors. And that was my way of trying to express that concept that, you know, the subsidiary concept within the GNSO structure here. Any comments? Does that seem a reasonable thing to leave? Does anyone...
This is Steve. I think it is a good approach. I did have one question, which is, does this mean that none of these groups can make any changes in their charters, rules, or procedures, or names, but leaving that aside, without getting approval of the board of directors?
Well, I think all charters...
Yeah, I'm just wondering if all those things really need to be treated the same or not.
Right. You mean like rules and procedures?
Yeah. You know, what if, you know, if you said, I don't know, a motion has to be presented 10 days in advance, and you change that to 12 days in advance, would you have to get approval? You know, you actually have to have a resolution of the board of directors?
That does seem to be overkill. If we assume that rules and procedures are defined in chart, well, for example, with the GNSO Council, our rules and procedures do need to be approved by the board, as I understand it. They're supposedly easier to get approved than a bylaws change because it doesn't have to go through the legal process, and it's a lighter weight process at the end game. But essentially, for the GNSO Council, as I understand it, the rules and procedures are still subject to board approval. Whereas for constituencies and stakeholder groups and whatever processes, probably informal, a house develops, they probably don't need to be.
Yeah, that was my concern, that this might be a little bit too extensive.
Right. So if it was just charters and or names, would that be a more reasonable statement?
Yeah, except if in fact the council if the council still has to have its rules and procedures approved. I guess it doesn't. That could be spelled out somewhere else.
But basically, if that's defined in their charter, that they have to have their rules and procedures approved by the board, then it doesn't necessarily need to be said here.
I guess that's right.
That each of the charters could be the responsible place for defining to what degree your rules and procedures were micromanaged. So does that make sense that I just dropped those two?
Average.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's really any need to drop them, to be honest. Or at least if you drop rules and procedures, wouldn't you have to put them in somewhere else?
Well, if the argument is that, which I understood, is that rules and procedures, for example, for a constituency, those, other than what's defined in the charter, rules and procedures about how to run a meeting, when to have a meeting, how to do all these things that are housekeeping at a constituency level, do not need anyone's approval but the members. And
yep.
And the second thing where I was agreeing with Steve was sort of saying, and it is each of the charters that will define to what extent rules and procedures belong. So it's really only the council that's an issue.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm in favor of dropping rules and procedures then.
And maybe you're right. For the council, somewhere down in Section 3, a comment about rules and procedures needs to be added.
Yeah, the problem with that sentence there is that we're mixing in the council, the houses, the stakeholder groups, and the constituencies, and they'll all have very different ways of working once the new GNSO system is in place. So maybe we're trying to mix in too many things.
Actually, if I think about it, the GNSO Council could probably be dropped from this, in that since even their rules and procedures are how things are defined is elsewhere in this document, that sentence with rules and procedures dropped and with GNSO counsel dropped would make sense. And if we need to add another sentence for GNSO counsel, we can.
Yeah. Could work that way. But you'd still have, so you've got, you'd have just in these bylaws, comma, the two houses and so on. Is that what you're suggesting?
Except as otherwise defined in these bylaws, the two houses, the four stakeholder groups, and the constituencies were responsible for their own charters and or names with the approval of their members and the ICANN Board of Directors. The GNSO Council is pretty much constrained anywhere else. We do have statements later on about there being a rules and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And things being put in the rules and procedures for the GNSO. And that may be the way to handle it. Or
The sentence does say, except as otherwise defined in these bylaws. I'm just looking at the fact that we start with the GNSO shall consist of listing four things and then missing one of them out might not seem too logical, if you see what
right.
I mean.
And it is, as you say, defined elsewhere in these bylaws.
Yeah, so maybe we don't need to drop the GNSO Council out because
okay.
The sentence, you know what, I'm...
Right, we could, yeah, okay. I understand. I put it back. I mean, I'm working on an edit version, which I haven't saved yet. Okay, any other comments on this?
This is John. I have a comment.
Sure.
The way we're formulating the registrar approach to this, day one, we will not have any constituencies because the registrar constituency will be turned into a registrar stakeholder group. We represent all our ICANN accredited registrars. Some constituencies may form based on geography, type of registrar, that kind of thing at some point in the future. But so my only concern is it looks like you have to have a constituency under this formulation. So if there's some kind of language that we could put in little I and then in the sentence that says, the sentence you just read, GNSO Council, the two houses, the four stakeholder groups, and any applicable constituencies or any approved constituencies or something like that. And then in little I, we'll need to put in some language just to cover that concept.
Right. There would need to be language on little I. On the last one, I don't know that there would be because it says, and all the constituencies. So if little I has already said that a stakeholder group might be constituency list.
You could say any constituency list.
Well,
and all
the constituencies.
All constituencies is fine.
Right, and the constituencies even doesn't specify that there is one in every stakeholder.
Yep, I'm good with that.
Right. So on the first one, this is entering territory beyond this in terms of charters, but I guess assuming that it would be okay, you know, with those that are approving charters, the sentence would be a number of constituencies, if any, organized within stakeholder groups.
Yep.
Would be the phrase. I'll put it there in parentheses at the moment to see if we can get more feedback on it, but sure.
Thank you.
Okay. So, at the moment, I mean, I won't delete the original yet, but at the moment, is it safe to assume that this is sort of our working language as we proceed with this? And we do need to resolve, I guess there's the if any language. I hadn't known that was an option. I'd be interested in seeing the new stakeholder group charters. So, any other comments on 2, 7, and 8 here? Okay, on Q10 then. Q10, where were we on Q10? Now, this will, having accepted this, while we're still waiting on the board to tell us if we can change names, I believe that an implication of this, having accepted it, is that name changes proposed by one stakeholder group by another sort of fall out, since houses, stakeholder groups, and constituencies with members and board approval are responsible for their own names. Is that a sensible conclusion? And that would mean that the issue that we still had open on names was the renaming of the non-contracted party's house, because that's a name suggested by one of its members that would need to be discussed with the other member and resolved. But all the other proposals we had for name change had to do with one stakeholder group or proto-stakeholder group supporting a name for someone else. So would it be safe to assume that we can sort of cross those off our list as issues that we need further resolution on? I'll write that one up later and see if there's other comment on it. But okay, move to Q10 then, if there's no more discussion on 7 and 8. What was there on 10? That was just one of the action items. I don't remember who was working on that one. Go back to my notes. Is anyone here that was working on that one? Or was that me? One thing I didn't bring up.
Where are you now, Avery, on Q10?
Trying to move to 10. And so 10, basically we had two item issues. Line 45 on a spreadsheet, it was postulated that there was full agreement on the point that with the exception of voting, no individual or entity shall be excluded from observing a constituency merely because of participating in another constituency. Each constituency will be responsible for determining its own rules relating to observer participation. Oh, no, that was line 46. Sorry. Excuse me. Line 45, let me go back. It was postulated that with full consensus on the point, an individual may not serve simultaneously as a GNSO council and a board, an ICANN board member. This needs confirmation. So the assumption was that no one was disagreeing with that, and I'm just coming back to make sure that that is the case. The question was on the list for a week, and now I'm just double-checking that that is the case. We all do agree on that one. Is that correct? No one spoke out about that. Okay. Then the second one was a line that I guess I suggested right at the end of the meeting on line 46 in the spreadsheet, which was the Article 3, no individual or entity shall be excluded from participation in a constituency merely because of participation in another constituency. And there was a concern during the discussion that, you know, well, what does that mean about voting? And so I think it was me at the end that suggested some language. With the exception of voting, no individual or entity shall be excluded from observing a constituency merely because of participation in another constituency. Each constituency will be responsible for determining its own rules relating to observer participation. But I basically read that out at the end of the meeting. No one commented then. No one's commented on the list. And are there comments on it?
It's Alan. I have a question for clarification. Is the implication that for voting the individual would have to choose where they vote?
Yes. I think
doesn't that need to be clearer, though?
Well, they can only vote in one. I mean, how would you make it clearer?
By saying they have to choose or something. Otherwise, it's unspoken completely.
In some cases, their eligibility to vote might be determined by the rules of the body that we're talking about, the constituency, I guess, in this case.
So are we not working on the assumption that these individuals are already a member of one constituency and observing another? So they would vote in with the constituency they're members of, wouldn't they?
Perhaps just changing the word participation to member.
Where's that word?
Membership, indeed, for sentence.
Avery, I wasn't at the last meeting, but I think your intent is to preserve the current clause but remove duplicate voting. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, currently, an ISP could also, and who is also a registrar, could be a full member of both of those constituencies. And we're saying that would still be the case, but they have only one vote, and they must need to decide how to cast it, case by case basis, every permanently for life.
So maybe it's just the simplest thing is just to go for a simple sentence, no double voting or whatever.
Well, are we saying that, or are we questioning whether in one constituency you would have full rights and in the other constituency just observer status? I'm confused now as to what's being proposed out of those two.
I understood it to be that we're trying to avoid a case where people... I mean, do we have a problem, as you say, with people being members of two constituencies, or do we have a problem with them because of their being members of two constituencies voting in both?
I think the latter was the problem.
Yeah.
And we wanted to keep, at least as I was understanding it, we wanted to maintain the ability for anyone to observe and to be a full participant with the exception of voting in the constituencies that were appropriate.
Out of curiosity, do we really have many situations where this happens?
We have lots of situations where it could happen. Every registrar and registry is a business.
Okay.
And most registrars might be registries soon.
Right.
Or vice versa.
And
well, no, vice versa won't happen.
And some days we may have a non-commercial registrar or a non-commercial registry.
But regardless of how we craft this, Avery, how would it be policed?
How would it be policed?
Yes. How would you maintain that this is effectively put into practice?
Okay, I guess, and you're right, I hadn't given much thought to it, but I guess on the first thing is part of the new, of the improvements is a global list of members of all constituencies, correct? Someone from staff, policy staff, please confirm that, if I'm remembering correctly. It's one of the improvements was we build a global list of members of constituencies.
That's in the OSD.
That's in the OSD, but I think it was also in the improvement requirements.
Yeah.
Right, it's the OSD that was working on it, but I think it was in the improvements requirements. If that's the case, I mean, then I don't know that that's a policing, but it's certainly the place where you demarcate where someone is a voting member. And perhaps that's a way of declaring it. Policing it is we don't police anything other than people standing up and yelling, so-and-so voted twice. But I don't know about policing, but certainly making it visible if within the membership role of GNSO, it's demarcated where someone is a voting member.
Okay, Tony Avery, I think that would provide a way to do it. But somehow, even within a constituency, having a checklist that you can refer to would be quite helpful at times like that.
Right. So that would be stuff to basically pass on to the OSC in terms of, you know, your question, which is a good one, and I'm sure that it's been picked up, is, you know, how do we enforce such a rule? And I think, you know, visibility and transparency is I mean, the standard way people start shouting about what they've seen.
Aubrey, this is Steve. Could I get
certainly. I don't.
And
yeah.
Alan.
Okay, Steve and then Alan.
Well, one problem I see with this, I guess there are two things I want to say. First of all, as I mentioned before, some of this problem can be dealt with by the constituencies in the way they define membership and voting membership, and they can say, you know, when you apply to be a member, you have to disclose if you're a voting member of some other constituency, and if so, you can't be a voting member of our constituency. So there's ways that this can be dealt with at the constituency level. But my other question is, we heard a few minutes ago that the registrar stakeholder group is not going to have any constituencies. So a registrar is over there in that stakeholder group, but under this language, they could still be a voting member of a constituency in some other stakeholder group. Is that intended? I hope that's not intended.
It's certainly wasn't intended when I wrote the language.
Yeah. I don't think it's true, Steve, actually, because if you can't be a voting member of two constituencies, no matter where they are, it doesn't really matter, does it?
There is no constituency.
Well, there would be the stakeholder group would be the constituency.
That's not what John said earlier in the call.
That's true. It's not what John said, but John
put
us right.
That. Obviously, the intent of the language, I'm sure, was not to impact that a registrar would be able to do that, whether we call ourselves a stakeholder group or a constituency.
A stakeholder group without constituencies de facto has a constituency of the whole.
Yeah, that's my understanding. At the outset, the registrar's stakeholder group is the registrar's constituency.
And in fact, I should probably remove that "if any" if that's the clause,
right.
Because what we're saying is yes, if there's identity between constituency and stakeholder group.
That's not what's in our application, so do not remove the.
I'm not removing it. I have a parenthesis still.
It also doesn't coincide with what's in the non-commercial stakeholder group application. In which case, as I thought in the registries, you could become members of several constituencies, presumably voting members in their own right.
You know, is some of this discussion premature because you're expecting to rewrite or change the stakeholder group charters?
When do those come out, like in the next day or two, right?
Well, we know they're meeting tomorrow, but we don't know when they're going to release them.
Oh, okay.
According to the resolution, they were supposed to release them yesterday.
Yep, that's right. Someone from policy staff indicate when they think those... But you're right, we've probably resolved all we can on this language now. So I'll keep it as working language, but we'll come back to it. I'll keep it in parentheses as working language. And then we'll come back to it having discussed all these things. Can someone from policy staff give us an update on when we'll see those?
Margie, is Raimundo still on the phone? He may be able to answer that.
Yes, I am the phone. What was the
question is, when will we see the updated stakeholder group charters that were mentioned as coming out?
This has been postponed one or two times, so I hope that we will have a view on that at least on the final date of the posting of the charter tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks.
I cannot guarantee.
Okay, so we'll come back to this one after that happens. To
okay.
See, because at the moment, and
soon,
I'll look
as,
at
as soon as, I, as soon as I have an answer, I will communicate it tomorrow to the group.
Okay, thank you. So I'll leave this one as a tentative language, but we'll come back to it, and I'll see if I can't come up with a fine tuning for the voting versus non-voting issue that Alan brought up, that's sort of separate from whether a constituency exists or doesn't exist in a one constituency stakeholder group or a non-constituency stakeholder group or a soft constituency stakeholder group or whatever word we use.
I would suggest we try to keep to the words non-voting and not use the observer, which may have very different meanings in different stakeholder groups or constituencies.
Okay. Now, the next one was the one that I was doing in the doodle. And let me go to that, which was the placement of NCAs. As I looked at the doodle, I can get back there. Oh, well. We seem to have a very strong majority for a strong support for two things. One is that it's the NOMCOM that assigns NCAs to a house or to the non-house option. There were four voices against that, but one of the voices against that marked it also. So it wasn't against it, just it was one of two options that was acceptable. So at least three. One of the three voices that didn't go that way said, but he would live with anything. So that one doesn't really count. So at this point, basically there was two, Alan and Olga, who basically felt that the NCAs decide among themselves and felt very strongly about that. And but everyone else, basically, so I'd say that we're tending towards a rough consensus on asking NOMCOM to make the determination. Then the other question that was close to being weighted the same way was the question between should it be defined in the bylaws as being the NOMCOM, or should that be defined in GNSO rules and procedures or process and procedures? And three people, Alan, Greg, and Steve, basically preferred bylaws, with everyone else preferring the GNSO procedures, the specific document. Both of them are approved by the board, the main difference being one is the legal document that has to go through legal review, and one is, you know, less onerous to change. I'd like to open the discussion on that, because as I said, this was just to give us an indicator. I think we're tending towards rough consensus on in the rules and procedures, and NOMCOM does it, but would anyone like to comment?
It's Alan. I'd like an opinion from staff on whether we really can put instructions on how the NOMCOM works in the GNSO rules. Because that's what we're really saying to do here.
Well, we're asking the NOMCOM, and the NOMCOM does come to the GNSO each time saying, what do you need, what do you want?
And but then they have discretion on whether they listen to it or use some other rules or whatever. That, this is different. We're not setting qualifications or suggested qualifications. We're saying what it is they advertise for and fill positions for.
I think you're right. I think at the most we can ask that this happen, and then within the NOMCOM review, it gets decided. And we obviously need a transition procedure for this one anyhow, since there's no way it'll happen next year.
Aubrey, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Please.
Yeah, I just wanted to support what Alan said. I he was looking at it a little bit differently than I was, but I think that's a good point, that unless it's in the bylaws, it's hard to see how this would be binding on the NOMCOM. The other point is, I think that the way that the GNSO Council, all the other seats on the GNSO Council are populated is spelled out in the bylaws. You know, this stakeholder group gets this many seats, this stakeholder group gets that many seats, and so forth. And they sit in these houses. And I just think it would be odd if part of that were in the bylaws, but part of it were in the rules of procedures, which is certainly much less public. So that was my reason for supporting having this in the bylaws.
That is actually a good point about it. If the board approves it in the bylaws and it gets made legal document, then it is binding on NOMCOM, I would assume.
I mean, I would assume it's in the NOMCOM part of the bylaws.
You'd have to have a conforming change anyway.
That
these are the things that the NOMCOM does, and it would have to be spelled out that they make this assignment.
The other thing we haven't discussed here, it was discussed in a very early meeting with the NOMCOM, was to what extent they feel, or the individuals feel, that this might make it very difficult to actually fill the positions.
Well, I thought that one was especially the case when they were being asked to fill that one that might have the attributes of chair. I don't know that it was quite as difficult for them to find someone for one house or the other, but
we don't know to what extent they'll, you know, if they have to fill the houseless NCA and one of the others, are they going to advertise as two different positions? Will they advertise both of them and then make a decision internally which who goes which?
It's just a logistics issue that I think they should be party to have some input into the discussion.
There is no NOMCOM. There's this year's NOMCOM.
No, I understand.
There is no NOMCOM in general, and I think if this becomes the requirements for the task, and it's reviewed by the board and perhaps by NOMCOM review, it just becomes one of the tasks. So it's certainly impossible this year for NOMCOM to do it or next year, but I don't understand it being impossible for NOMCOM. It just becomes another piece of the puzzle.
I don't think I said impossible. I said difficult. It's a judgment call I'm asking for.
But as I said, there's no real NOMCOM to go to.
Okay.
Because it's an ethereal sort of thing. The NOMCOM exists only in bylaws. And each year's instantiation. But yeah, okay. Anyone else want to speak on this?
Aubrey, it's Margie.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'll just take a look to see whether this change would be in the GNSO part of the bylaws or the non-com part of the bylaws. We haven't really explored that, so I'll take that on as something to look into and email you guys.
Okay, thanks. And one thing that's certain, and I think we need to put, and I want to check on this, is that we will need something to function in the transition. We know that this won't be the case for 2010. At least I don't believe it'll be the case in 2010. Actually, we know that the NCAs that take a seat with this council at the end of the year will not be chosen that way by the NOMCOM. That is certain. Whether we can get it resolved in time for the next class, the one where Terry's seat is considered, does this or not, that's still possible. But certainly we know that for the ones that get seated in Seoul, that will not be possible. So we will need a transitional sentence. Will there be objections from people for the transition that the NCAs decide?
I would object to that.
You would object to that.
Yeah. But isn't this entire provision say something like subject to the transitional provision, so it recognizes.
Right, yeah. But it says that we need a transitional provision.
Yeah, we need a transitional provision. Have we looked at the transitional provisions in this exercise?
Oh, yeah, we have a couple times, and we need to get back there.
Okay.
But one of the problems with the transitionals is until you know where you're going, it's really...
I agree.
Okay. Any other issues on this one? So this one has action items of looking at how this would go into the bylaws. But we do have a majority at the moment, a strong majority of people saying this should not be in the bylaws. So we need to continue discussing that. This is on the who basically believes it does not belong in the bylaws, but in the process and procedures, you want to give reasoning. I mean, I gave mine, which is put it in a place that's more flexible and doesn't require the legal structure for changing it. But, and basically looking at this being less ICNY issue of how you see three NOMCOMs, but being more of a GNSO council issue and therefore being more local than bylaws. But that was my reasoning. But I can see what Steve mentioned. Anyone else wish to comment on this? Okay. Then the next thing was basically talking through the issues, and what I'd actually like to do, if it's okay with people, is go to the wiki page with the bylaws to show what I've done there and to show where I think we're still working, and also ask people to look at that and make sure that everything is represented. So, and this is on the, I both sent out the URL in email last night, and I put it in the notes section of the Adobe thing.
Is there a link on the wiki page? What would be the link here? I'm on the wiki page now.
So if you're in restructuring, You have to go to the restructuring wiki page.
That's what I'm on, I think.
And in the restructuring implication, there's bylaws with proposed changes for discussion.
That's the one to look at? Okay, thank
yeah.
you. Thank you.
Okay, so basically I tried to reconstruct the Article 10 and the transition article as I believe the state, the dynamic state they're in now. So, for example, under Article 10, Section 2, I have both the, I indicate question 7-8, most, I tried to keep the changes in italics, question 7-8, and then I basically indicate the first is the current language, then the or is the language that I proposed and that we discussed. In effect, is, did I save the if any? Yes, I saved the if any. So with today's changes, then we move to 3. The first place, I made the registries change from registry change and didn't mark that as tentative. I just assumed that that was something that was done. On Q1, basically, we still have the pending question, 3 or 6 representatives, so that's indicated there in italics. It's under 3.1D. And we also had the renaming question 2 and individuals. So, as I mentioned, with accepting that groups decide their own names, I'm assuming that that one can go away. But that's why I have a line through it, but I still have it there. Then in E, Q17, including, for example, the making and seconding of motions. One of the things we had discussed in Q17 is how to make sure that the non-voting person would have that. Now, incidentally, this also has question 3 in it, you know, adopted, that will be assigned to each house, subject to selection procedure adopted, and then here's the questions that we have by that house, as defined in council rules and procedures, or as defined elsewhere in the bylaws. So basically that indicating that's the unresolved issue that we've got at that point. Then we had the language, the representatives from the registries, stakeholder group, and registrar stakeholders shall be designated as a contracted party's house. Notice I did not capitalize contracted parties, indicating that that's a description, not necessarily the name. If we had a different name, then it could be put in there. So I didn't want to step on that particular issue. The representatives of the commercial stakeholder group and non-commercial group shall be, I guess I have to put in stakeholder group there, shall be designated as a non-contracted party's house. Again, not capitalized, so I'm not saying that's the name, but that designates what it is. Then the next one I had marked, each stakeholder group may select representatives to its council procedures Q4. It was the one we're waiting for on a board answer also, subject to the provisions that each board recognized constituency shall be allocated. I did put a line through since the council participants and the participants in this call, other than staff, have pretty much been unanimous on that subject. Then the next place I have question 5 was the, I see my line break got lost still, where I have 2. I have the original language, and then halfway through, which is not, I can't see a line break on it, but is the second alternative, which is stakeholder groups should ensure that representation is both. And I'll have to fix the formatting there so it can be seen better. That one we talked about earlier today, and We're still waiting for Philip's feedback on the group's work. In the next paragraph, we had liaisons, and I added as a piece that was, and as the language that we had for NCAs and the language that we had for liaisons was identical, that be entitled to participate on equal footing. And when I made the change for NCAs that they were entitled to make and second motions, I needed to make a sort of equivalent change. And, you know, that they're not entitled to vote or to make or second motion. Or entitled to vote. So basically that's that change. I don't believe we had a lot of controversy on allowing NCAs make motions and second them, nor do I think we had have controversy on liaisons, and I apologize, Alan, not making motions and seconding them. You get to write them, but...
I'll object just pro forma.
Thank you.
I do wish ICANN, however, would standardize on wording. They use the term all rights except for voting on both the board and other groups, and that implies you can't make motions also.
Right.
I just wish they were more transparent.
Yeah. I don't know if it's transparent as opposed to just precise.
Well,
I think it's some of these things, nobody's trying to hide anything. It's just that it's not, you know, but then again, I think once we get everything fully precise, we'll have 100 volumes of bylaw.
The curious thing is occasionally liaisons on the board make motions and no one notices and they go through.
Right, and it kind of almost happens in the council, too. Okay. Then moving on, the next place I had parentheses was Q6. Was except in special circumstances such as to meet geographic diversity. But that is also... How is that one affected by the question 10 work? Oh, no, it's different, right. This is the term limit. So I have this one still in one of the open issues in this one, and perhaps that's the only place that the question mark should be, since I don't know if anyone's objecting to the whole statement. At a special circumstance is approved by a majority vote, and so of the council or of the house where the council members will sit was one of the issues that was under discussion. Now, for the geographic, the exception was made 2/3 of the whole, or is proposed at 2/3 of the whole council. Since this is a council seating issue, should it be council, or since it's representative of a house, should it be house?
It's Ellen. We don't have a concept of a vote of majority of council. It would have to be a vote of some fraction, maybe majority of both houses, wouldn't
That's
it?
Right. It would have to be. So I guess what council counts as shorthand of both houses.
Okay.
Thank you. I will fix that. Anyone else want to comment? And I will fix of both houses. No other comments, so...
One would question what happens if the vote fails, but I guess we can ignore that for the moment.
I guess if it fails, that would mean they'd have to hold an election.
Okay. Aubrey, this is Steve. I'm going to have to drop off here in a minute. Is the next call at the same time?
Next call is at the same time, but I am going to ask if I can extend it for longer to see if we can try and finish up, although I might not, depending on the state of things with the board's response. So I'm not sure, but yes, same time.
Okay,
but
well,
maybe
yeah,
longer
I think,
if possible, but I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, I agree with you that until we hear from the board, there's a lot of things we may be near the end of what we can do.
I don't think so. I think there's still a lot of little things, but thanks. Okay, like this one. It would seem to me that by the rules we're proposing in two, or that I proposed and we're sort of working with, that this one would need to be of both houses, because we're talking about council seating. And we're not talking about house seating or house-specific something, but it really is specific to council seating. What do people think on that?
It should be the same rules for exemptions of the geographic rules, I would think.
That seems to make sense to me. Do people object to that notion? In which case, I'll still leave it What I'll do is I'll put a line through the second option to show that we're tending one way or another, but not eliminate it. Okay. Procedures for handling council member in three, we had basically crossed out the whole council member will resign and basically said that's being moved to operating rules and procedures. No one has voiced an objection to removing that. So is there any objection to removing that at this point? Okay, so I'm assuming that can be removed. I'll leave it there lined in, but it's basically not in there at the moment. I mean, lined out. Okay, and six, each of the two houses as described shall make selection to fill to ICANN seat. Question nine is indicated. 13-14-14-13 is basically the alternate that we've asked the board for a judgment on. So some of these could get cleaned out quite quickly once we have the board answer. Q10 was both seats shall not be held by individuals employed by, and that was basically also lined out. That was another part of Q10. It was lined out, and no one has objected yet to removing that. Is there any objection pending to removing that? Okay, I'll continue leaving it lined out so it's not invisible, but it's lined out. Under seven, we had, this is one I stuck in while I was writing it. It's something that has been discussed earlier, not exactly in the context of our questions, but basically one of the pending questions from the board had been to us with a 60% in each house for electing a council chair, what happens if the new council can't elect a chair? And I had suggested on the list a while back, and I don't think I encountered any opposition or rewording, so I've got it in there, is basically, and I haven't actually worded it yet, was basically the response to the board question, what happens if councils are not, in the event the GNSO council has not elected a GNSO council chair, the vice chair will serve as interim GNSO co-chair until a successful election can be held. And then I think that we would put in the, what I further recommended, but I think this can go in the election procedure stuff that goes in the rules and such, is that one waits a quarter, waits 2 months, three months to run an election so that the council isn't in constant state of election. But basically, the council lets the two co-chairs the two vice chairs function as co-chair, and then holds another election, 2 months hence, 3 months hence. But that doesn't need to be in the bylaws, I don't think.
Avery, I haven't paid a lot of attention to this, I admit, but is it obvious that there will be two co-chair or vice chairs selected prior to the selection of a chair?
I don't know. That's something that...
Normally, one selects the vice chairs afterwards, given the person who lost the election the opportunity to take that role.
But in this case, we've... You're right. We'll have to look at that, but I really think that would be a rules and procedures thing.
Okay. I just want to make sure it's viable.
I think it's viable. I think it's just a question that if this is what is accepted by the group and the council, then and of course by the board eventually, then the rules and procedures have to take it into account, and that means houses elect their vice chairs even simultaneously, but before the termination of the current council chair's term. Because you have a current council whose term ends at the beginning of the next chair.
Okay, and that would allow a vice chair to run as chair and perhaps win or perhaps not.
Right, and then...
If they win, they have to be replaced.
Right, and then they can just be replaced. Yes, exactly. And one would expect that if you had two co-chairs functioning as co-chairs, one of them might be able to convince people later. I don't know. I won't be able to. Okay. Then, in B, Q2, non-contracted party house or users and providers house, I left that one in because that one is the one that's House-based decision, and as one member of the House doesn't want to be called non-contracted parties, and one member of the House doesn't want to be called users and providers, that's an open issue for them. It may be a question of replacing this language with the House designated for non-contracted parties in small characters and leave the name open and just list the designation there. I certainly don't want to hold up bylaws being approved because we don't have names for the houses yet. So if we haven't decided on an equitable name for the House, that would be my recommendation for how to, you know, if I don't include that in, House designated for non. Anyone want to comment on that?
Probably a lot of other places with similar changes.
Yeah, and I'll go through later and make sure, and hopefully the people that are doing sanity reading on this. But so far, this is the first reading I've done other than myself. Okay, and then there's a Q2 indicated with an individual crossed out. And then that's it for that one. Section 4. I don't see anything. That's the staff supporting. I don't know. That one hadn't been changed, and I just included it so that we'd have a complete picture of what we're talking about. Section 5, stakeholder groups, I added, and constituencies. It had been, you know, just constituencies, but it seems to me that it talks about both. So that was a suggested change on my part when I was putting this together. Then the next one, I have another. In 1D, I have another, and individuals. Oh, dear, we've gone way over time. I'm sorry, I didn't notice. I got so carried away. Do people mind if we continue working through this? I promised to break after an hour, and I didn't.
That's when Steve left.
I'm sorry. Are other people willing for me to continue walking through this?
Avery, this is Stefan. I have to drop off the call as well. Apologies.
Okay.
But,
And my apologies. I got so carried away, I lost track of time. I was having so much fun.
That's understandable. Good luck to you all.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
I think that, you know, with people dropping off, I have to stop now. If anybody wants to stay with me and continue walking through this, please say so, and I'll continue.
I've got to leave in 3 minutes anyway. So.
Okay. So we'll talk on the list about how we proceed. I ask everybody to read through this. Please comment on any place where I didn't get it right, where I missed some edit, where I've got funny wording, any of it. I don't know what's going to happen with the board. I don't know if they're going to gate our being able to complete this by, you know, early next week sometime, or whether it's all going to come together. But I'm going to keep pushing through that. Just so people know, I am traveling next weekend, so I probably won't do a whole lot of work on the weekend next week. And then next Monday, I'll be in Sweden. I'll be fine for the call. But I won't be very functional on Saturday, Sunday. And I'll continue the last part of this on the list. And again, apologies for going beyond the time without even knowing it. And I'll talk to you.
Thank you, Avery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Avery.